Welcome to the Mike and Doug Show, a production of Aim for Truth and Americans for Innovation. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Douglas. How are you this Friday?
I am again once shocked, as always, shocked. It's always a shocking thing. We go down to the mines, we find in those bins the stuff you pull up, some of the best stuff. We find ores, you know, all those new ores, the rare ores. Oh, it's good. So what you just discovered, again, I hate to sound just redundant. I mean, I sound like I keep saying this over and over again, but I have researched trying to prove that the Rothschilds really directed the Reuters from the beginning. There's some, you know, we've demonstrated as much proof as I could find and the Conclave could help me find. And then when it went to the Associated Press, we kept saying, oh no, we know. We know everyone says the Rothschilds control the Associated Press because that's what controls the news in America, basically, them and Reuters. So I looked and looked and looked, and you can find all of their associations, but you can't find the real smoking gun until you just discovered it and you have revealed it to us. And that's what we're going to talk about today, the smoking gun of how J.P. Morgan, the step and fetch boy for the Rothschilds, in fact, pretty much finally kind of bought off the propaganda machine of our mainstream media here in America back at the beginning of World War One. So that's the topic today. Mike, lay it on us. And everybody, you better sit back because another conspiracy theory is going to become a fact.
Okay, the first thing we need to do is give a shout out to a reader, and I don't even know this person's name, I don't think, who pointed us in this direction. So they read the last post at Americans for Innovation, and then they had this document from the Congress in 1921. Sorry.
Is that the bat phone or is that the president?
That's the bat phone.
Okay.
My wife calling me to dinner.
Much more important than the president.
Yes, right. And this document was a bombshell. And the reason it was a bombshell, because as you know, for years, we've been studying this first Imperial Press Conference of 1909. And having already studied the writings of the secret writings of the British War Propaganda Board from 1914 on. So we had a lot of detailed information that had not previously been available to the public, and at some point in the last 10 or 15 years was released by the British Library. No, this was the Parliamentary Archives, and also by the NSA. And so in those documents, we found a report. It was about 180-page report that was prepared in 1916 by Charles F.G. Masterman, who was the director of Wellington House, which was the British War Propaganda Board at the beginning of World War One. And then this report was being prepared because that board was going to become a formal department of propaganda in the beginning of 1917. This is during World War One. And so this report was quite detailed, and part of it was prepared by Sir Gilbert Parker, who was, in this document says right on it, it's a secret document for the War Cabinet's eyes only, that he was in charge of American propaganda. And in it, he gives exquisite detail of everything that they had been doing since the beginning and actually before World War One, in targeting Americans and America to change its mind about Germany and enter the war. So that's a brief summary of what they were doing. But he gave names, he gave people, he gave dates, quantities of literature, documents, movies, photographs, every kind of propaganda mechanism you can possibly imagine, he described in great detail. And as we're going through this 180-page report, there were 5 pages missing. And so a researcher in the UK asked to get those from the archives, and the archives provided them. And wouldn't you know it, those five pages all dealt with the description of the activities of American propaganda that I had just described previously that were missing from that document. Now, here we are in 2019 when we looked for that. And it was information from 100 years ago that was still being censored. And it described all these things that Sir Gilbert Parker was up to in colluding with Americans, many Americans, academics, judges, media, literary people, movie theaters, politicians, industrialists, bankers, across the board. He described specifically how certain people were more helpful than others, and included in that, he identifies a man by the name of Elihu Root, and also he identifies the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace as two most helpful organizations in British propaganda. So as a way of background, that's what that document disclosed, and it is linked to the latest article that Betsy just posted. And then we find this, we just discover this congressional record. There's actually three congressional records from 1917 to 1921, where three different congressmen were raising the red flag about this British activity. Now, up until now, we hadn't really known about any opposition to the propaganda activities of the British related to America, but now we're seeing that they're not buried because they're available, but they're hard to find, and very few people were writing about it. Now we've got this document which says that in 1914, J.P. Morgan pulled together a group of individuals, and then specifically. Let me read you what it says here. In March 1915, the J.P. Morgan interests, the steel, shipbuilding, and powder interest, which was munitions or explosives, and their subsidiary organizations got together 12 men high up in the newspaper world and employed them to select the most influential newspapers in the United States and sufficient number of them to control generally the policy of the daily press of the United States. Now, that alone was enough to raise the hair on the back of your neck, but he goes on and he specifically discusses how they decided that they only needed to control the policy of 25 newspapers to control the editorial policy of the United States. And specifically, they talk about that effort being used to take a pacifist America, where we had a president, Wilson, who had run on a non-intervention policy, and then as soon as he becomes elected, completely changes and supports war. And that is what these congressmen are specifically talking about. So what we see here is 100 years of suppression of an activity that J.P. Morgan was involved in. And this is the first time I had ever seen J.P. Morgan specifically mentioned related to controlling the press. We knew a lot about the Empire Press Union of 1909 and the follow-on Empire Press Union, and then those newspaper people forming MI6 and MI5 and GCHQ. But what we never saw in those documents was J.P. Morgan mentioned. We did see Lord Rothschild mentioned. He was at the Imperial Press Conference. And as we talked about in our last interview, what we've discovered is that J.P. Morgan was a disciple of Lord N.M. Rothschild. And in fact, his father was secretly backed in his banking interest, J.S. Morgan. And his father had worked for Peabody and had been a part of the foundations of Riggs Bank. So what we see as Peabody died and then J.S. Morgan died in 1890, we see J.P. Morgan come to the helm in 1890 and change the name of the bank from J.S. Morgan to J.P. Morgan. And then what we're now seeing is that it was closely identified with the Pilgrim Society, with Cecil Rhodes, with Andrew Carnegie, with Lord Alfred Milner, and with the coming organization of the Pilgrim Society, which was, as we can see now, the plan to convert the British Empire from a monarchy to a corporate imperialist monarchy that would be run by corporations. And part of that effort was to seize control of all newspapers. They had, before the war, they had control of all the British newspapers, like the Daily Telegraph, the Daily Mail, the London Times, and on and Morning Post, on and on. But the American newspapers weren't completely in line. And what we see with this revelation is that J.P. Morgan took the plans of the Imperial Press Conference in 1909, and no doubt the instructions of the Rothschilds, who were his mentors, and came to the U.S. and specifically conspired with a small group of probably bankers and industrialists to figure out how to seize monopoly control of the editorial policy of the entire newspaper world in the United States. That's what we've discovered. And we thank the reader for putting us onto this new information.
And all down there in those dark caverns of the mines with just those lights on your head. It's just amazing what you're able to find, because I have looked this stuff up, okay? You can't find that.
There's a reason, Douglas. As we've been reading a lot of the histories of this time period from that period to the present, what we see and actually see written is that the members of the intelligence world, i.e. newspapers, i.e. TV, radio, press, all specifically chose the people that were going to write their histories. And what we're now seeing is those histories are censored. They're all censored. Sometimes they're not even talked about. And I'll give you one example. Everybody cites Carol Quigley's book on the Anglo-American establishment. And it has a lot of very useful details in it. But when you start looking for certain subjects in his books, he is completely silent. And he is totally silent on the Pilgrim Society, totally silent on the Empire Press Union, the Imperial Press Conference of 1908, 1909. And these are the drivers of what we see today that's driving this amorphous group we call the Deep State. They're not amorphous. They have names. They're called the Pilgrim Society. And everything else flows from there, in our opinion. And so the histories that we relied on to learn this stuff were silent on these issues. They were part of it. And we all know now that financial interests like J.P. Morgan and Andrew Carnegie specifically financed our libraries and our textbooks so that this information would not appear and would be wiped from the American consciousness, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. And I want to underscore what you mentioned about corporate intelligence. I mean, that's what this is. And corporate intelligence is about creating propaganda, and it's about creating counter-propaganda and counterintelligence. So from the beginning, when Rothschild really got control of the British banking system, and it was in its market, it actually was right in the market, Reuters was there. Reuters had already, as a news agency, had been around for just a very short period of time. And then behind the scenes, Rothschilds bought into Reuters and bought all of their intelligence networks, including their way of encoding things. And then later on, through the wireless and all these things, it's the intelligence and the encoding for the bankers so that they could have the news ahead of time so that they could make market deals so they would get rich. Now, let me just...
That is exactly right. That's exactly what we have the hard proof of now.
And let's remember that from time immemorial, N.M. Rothschild and Son they were the ones who set the gold and silver rate.
Let me point out, Douglas,
in an office for I don't even know how long. They only stopped a few years ago. They controlled the pricing of gold and silver. And in a little while, we're going to talk about the way that the banks use that silver as a hedge fund, and they manipulate silver on a very regular cycle so that they can use it as a way to make huge amounts of money. And JP Morgan is the worst at that. But we can get so deep. What you have discovered here is the missing link that I couldn't find, because I could find Rothschild link to the Reuters, couldn't find the Rothschild link to the Associated Press. If you read the standard, history, it says, they started back in 1849, and they're independent agencies that all work together. Well, no, we know that as soon as the Empire Press Union came over and said, no, you're all going to fall in line with what the Brits are doing, they controlled most of the East Coast ones and some of the West, all the big newspapers, all the big media controlled by the same people. Now, you can look and see who owns what, and yes, the Fortune 500 companies are owned by the big bankers, and they are also the ones who own the companies behind the Associated Press. The Associated Press is a group of news agencies. I forget how many, but quite a few. And they all get together, and they say that if a member says that something is true, they all can say it's true. So if anybody who is a member of the Associated Press says that the sky is green, they can all report the sky is green. And now they don't even have bylines on who it was that made the report. They don't have bylines on who took the pictures. It's all pumped out through the Associated Press. And that's where all mainstream media gets all their garbage. And we now, because of the research of the Americans for Innovation, you and your miners, have proven that they're all reading from the same script. It is created by a group called ISIS Management and a system called AVID, which basically gives all the mainstream media their content. Now, we knew this was the case. We knew it went back to the Brits because ISIS is another name for the Thames River. So that gave it away pretty clearly right there. And ISIS Management is, in fact, owned by Diane Weinstein's, a principal part of it's owned by Diane Weinstein's husband. What's his name? Michael
Bloom. Richard Bloom.
Richard Bloom. So we can see that in America, it is controlled, but I could never make the connection to the Rothschilds. But when I eventually, and you have now proven that, when I had heard that J.P. Morgan was really nothing more than Rothschild's teller, who on the boat from England to America just happened to find millions of dollars in his pocket, and he got to New York and opened a big bank. One of the biggest, and now is one of the biggest manipulators of silver in the world, as well as all these things.
I need to point out that when we talk about when J.P. Morgan acquired his bank, which was the day his dad died in a carriage accident in the Riviera, that was in 1890. Also that year, Lord Rosebery, who later became Prime Minister of England, inherited the N.M. Rothschild Bank fortune of his wife's father, N.M. Rothschild. And so the two of them totally changed banking, all in the matter of a few months. Now, you call it coincidence or not, I honestly don't believe that's the case. I think there was a plan afoot to completely alter the color and texture of global banking, and the Rothschilds and the Morgans were driving that bus for the Pilgrim Society. So they all fell in line behind this common strategy, and that's what they've been doing ever since. But that connection between the Rothschilds and J.P. Morgan is unmistakable now. And it was 1890 that we can actually show documents that there was an association.
It's an amazing association because just like Andrew Carnegie and John D. Rockefeller and Brigadier General Sarnoff, they somehow, they just get over here in America and they just become so filthy rich that J.P. Morgan at one point loaned money to the government of the United States so that we would not go bankrupt. He also controlled the patents of Tesla. He was Tesla's backer, as it were, capital. He built all kinds of things for Tesla. But when Tesla's free energy, which was a wireless free energy that would drive everything, when J.P. Morgan got in the car, this is a fantastic story that is repeated by many people. But basically, Tesla had created a suitcase size set of vacuum tubes that was a receiver that you plug into a car, and then it receives wirelessly the energy to run the car. And so he was in the car with J.P. Morgan, and J.P. Morgan said, well, this is fantastic. He was so excited. But he says, now, how do we gate how much is being used so that we can charge for it? And he goes, oh, no, you can't do that. It's free. It's free energy. Especially once they see how it's done, everyone will do it. And J.P. Morgan dropped him at that point. And then, of course, we now know that the Brits stole the Tesla patents. Hello,
J.P. Morgan.
Was he the person who stole the
patents? Of course he was. Here's why we can prove that. 1890, Tesla was looking for financial backing, and J.P. Morgan was one of his backers. But by 1890, Charles F.G. Masterman, who ended up starting Wellington House, was already doing secret deals with Marconi Wireless to develop the global, transmission systems for the planet for telegraphy as it was moving forward. There was already a plan afoot to steal all of Tesla's patents and put them all within the Marconi sphere, and Marconi Wireless would be then given a monopoly on the British Post Office and the British Admiralty's use of wireless all over the globe. J.P. Morgan knew that. So look, we've got the man who knows the British are going for the monopoly, turning around and playing nice guy with Tesla, but he never gave him enough money to really get things going. He gave him enough to extract all of his ideas, and then when the ideas were fully extracted, then he would automatically then decide not to fund the next stage. This is the typical way these finance guys grab control of inventions.
Well, it underscores the fact that what you found in one Rothschild's handwriting, that it wasn't just propaganda, it wasn't just the news and the pharmaceutical and the, what you called it, I liked it, explosives. It wasn't just steel and shipping and railroads. It was everything. They wanted complete control of everything, but they had to have the propaganda machine to hide what they were doing. And they have done it so well, they hid it from me, and I didn't think about the connection between J.P. Morgan, and I had no idea that when Sir Parker came over from England as the propagandist to try to convince Americans to, through propaganda and all these news agencies and their mainstream media connections from 1909, the Imperial Press Conference, which became the, as you pointed out, the Empire Press Union. You could say the Empire Press Union is kind of like their fake associate, like we have as the Associated Press. So then behind them, you have then J.P. Morgan saying to Parker and his assistant, basically, we need a little better control because the news networks have gotten a little bit bigger. So I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to buy all of them. And he bought, what did you say, 170 of these editorial major writers throughout all the newspapers and the media throughout America. And then, yes, amazingly, with the direct attack of British propaganda upon Americans who wanted to be isolationists and not join, the British instigated World War I against their enemies, the Germans, who really aren't their enemies because they're German also, by cutting the cable to the Germans, which basically was an act of war. Then they set up a false flag because they said, hey, you know, we just haven't convinced the Americans to jump on board. And Woodrow Wilson had gone through one of his terms, and he had been an isolationist, and he had promised to run in his second term to continue to be an isolationist and not jump into the war, World War I. And even though everyone was telling him to, because he had run his platform upon isolationism. Well, Sir Parker and J.P. Morgan, through controlling editorial connections, and then probably the standard Empire Press Union Pilgrim Society manipulation of the rest of the press, convinced America couldn't convince America even then to join the war. Woodrow Wilson was elected, and literally within a few weeks of being elected, we were in the war, in direct opposition to everything he had said. So
can I raise you something?
Yeah, it showed that their propaganda was good, and that it was so pervasive. Of course, it was illegal because it was a foreign country propagandizing us to stick our neck out into a war where the intelligence was based upon the false flag of the, how do you say it? Lusitania?
Lusitania. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when they sunk it, filled with Americans supposedly, but it was actually also filled with armaments, which it was not supposed to be. And so basically they set Germany up, Britain did, then they set us up. They propagandized us. We still didn't want to join in. But in the end, Woodrow Wilson and the Inquiry, his little group, and who was in the Inquiry? You can tell us all their names. They were the lawyers, the Rockefellers, the lawyers of the Carnegies, the lawyers for the J.P. Morgan, and all of the same usual suspects. So what we see here is one of the most pervasive plans. And this isn't just history, because it's still going on with Lord Malik Brown, who literally became second in charge of the United Nations, doing the same exact stuff. Jeffrey Patti, one of the biggest propaganda manipulators on the face of the earth to this very moment.
Yeah, the founder of Serco.
So, you know, I'm sorry I threw out so many different topics.
Can I read, just to reinforce what you said about what Wilson was doing versus what he was saying? And this is out of Representative Mickelson, who was Illinois 7th District, entered into the record in, May 26th of 1921. And yet, Mr. Chairman and members of this House, Sir Gilbert Parker states to the world under his signature, and that is an article he had just published in the Harper's Magazine, which we have and is linked up to this site, that at the very moment the President of the United States, speaking for the American people, in behalf of the American people, and as the mouthpiece of the American people, was urging them to remain neutral, he, Parker, was spending British gold from one end of this nation to the other for the purpose of driving this republic into the quarrels of European monarchies. If these charges are true, Mr. Chairman and gentlemen, and in view of the warfare still going on in Europe at this very hour, then the American lives lost were sacrificed not on the altar of universal democracy and freedom, but upon the blood-stained sacrificial stone of an inhuman avarice and greed. And if these charges be true, we must come to the conclusion that the American people were duped by an unscrupulous combination of wealth that, through its kept literary harlots, seduced the noble patriotism of the American citizenry in order to enrich themselves. Let us not shrink from facing and demanding the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Now, there's a couple of key points in there. This kept literary harlots is a comment that reminded us of this full-page ad in the New York Times on October 18th of 1914, where something like 50 British authors, some well-known like G.K. Chesterton, Gilbert Murray, Arthur Conan Doyle, H.G. Wells, all signed their signature. And at the heading, it says, "Famous British Authors Defend England's War." And I am sure that in Mickelson's mind, it was either that ad or something like it that motivated him to say kept literary harlots, because what they got was their best and brightest authors to lie to not only America, but to the British public and the world, to cajole everyone to go to war. And when we didn't want to go to war, that just shows you the power of what they were doing. And J.P. Morgan organized this so that this would happen. He paid for it. That's what this revelation is showing.
Absolutely. And you have already shown in Britain how even before World War I started, they started to have intelligence to work up nonsense against their enemies so that they could foment war. So you got the Wellington House, you got later the Chatham House rules, where you can't even mention who was in the meeting, and you have the British War Office. And then it turns into later, of course, all these intelligence agencies. Now that's the government side. What you're now revealing is the corporate side.
Yes.
Is more powerful than the government side. These people control the government in Britain.
Yeah.
And now we find out whether we like it or not, the Brits control us. Whether we like it or not, folks, take a look at who gets the biggest contracts in America. They're not Americans.
Well, let me point out that W.T. Stead, who was Cecil Rhodes' biographer and one of his leading advisors, actually started schooling not only the British newspapermen, but also American newspapermen like Hearst, William Randolph Hearst, in something, in a concept he created called government by journalism. Now, this was back in the late 1800s, government by journalism. That is what we have today, and everybody's been articulating it, but now we see where this started, where this concept started, and how little it's changed since it was conceived.
And in America, it got refined with Pulitzer and with they created the yellow journalism. I mean, they can literally create a war because they have a newspaper that people believed in.
Right.
So what you're seeing here is a repetition of what the British were doing. Now, I want to focus on something. Betsy and her team have posted in a Cat Report some things that we've been discussing for a long time. And that is that through the Rothschilds, of course, they've been manipulating gold and silver and later the LIBOR rate, the interest rates. And what do they control it by? Because we trust that the one person in the office at
M. Rothschild
and Sons who's answering the phone is being honest about what they're being told, and then they set the rate. But wait, that means they know ahead of time, before anybody else, what the rate's going to be, so therefore they could manipulate the market just by that fact alone.
Right.
Now, this has been going on since the Bank of England. Now, how bad is it? The Bank of England is based upon gold in a gold vault called the Gold Vault, and it's the Rothschild gold, right? Some say that for every ounce of gold there are paper notes of gold, which you buy on stock markets, you buy in commodity markets. For every ounce of gold, they've sold 35 paper fake ounces of gold, and it's backed up by that gold. So believe it or not, in the commodities market in gold and silver, we're not going to go to silver yet, but in gold, it's like fractional banking. And now, as you know, in America, fractional banking, they don't even have to have any fraction. They can bank on zero. It's absolutely astounding because the repo market is no longer being demanded every night for them to balance their sheets. No, they don't, not even to the 10% fractional. So the Rothschilds have, from the time they merged with Reuters, and now we know through J.P. Morgan and through the Empire Press Union merging with the Associated Press of America, which creates all of our news. Almost every speck of news you see comes from Reuters or Associated Press, Reuters Thompson or Associated Press. And those are all a bunch of lying, stinking, J.P. Morgan bought, Rothschild bought, lying. Did I say stinking? Because they stink because they're fake news. And they are the worst that there is, but all they're doing is they got hubris. They got too much pride. See, the British are so good at this because they speak proper English that everyone believes what they say. Here in America, we don't believe you because we're Americans until we test it. And so what we're finding out now is that these lying, stinking bankers, who are also propagandists, who also own the mainstream media, have been using silver as their prop-up hedge fund for the big banks since time immemorial. And believe it or not, there's actually a cycle of silver. How can you have a commodity market in a free market that has got a cycle that the bankers determine so they can buy and sell silver at the rates that they want during the time they want so they can hedge against it? Now, I happen to know somebody who knows exactly how many silver coins J.P. Morgan has amassed. Now, they have their own holding vault right next to the U.S. Mint. So every year that silver is coined, because coined silver and coined gold are legal currency in America, and by law, the value of them can be set by the U.S. government, and they can set at any price they want. So, sorry, Rothschilds, who have now turned over the right to set gold and silver rates to the group that owns the New York Stock Exchange, the Intercontinental Exchange Group, who are evil, and I don't want to talk about them, but they do it now, and they do it by a computer, supposedly. And that's a lie, too, because if there's a cycle in the market for commodities with gold and silver, and you happen to own the massive amount of coined silver, you control the market. So JP Morgan and Chase, the two biggest banks in America, basically, own so much silver, it's unbelievable. And we couldn't figure that out. We were trying to figure out that years ago. And so what I probably need is a
thing. Oh, please, just stop it. First of all, what I found so exciting about this research, Michael, is that you have established historical records. I call it breaking historical news, because it never became news until now. And this breaking historical news shows that JP Morgan, which was the predecessor of Chase, now merged, committed a treachery against the United States, correct?
Yes, that's true. Matter of fact,
sorry,
they were charged.
I had it muted. Sorry.
I was muted. Absolutely.
But those papers were rattling. But anyway, is that treachery?
This is what these congressmen were saying back at the time.
Right.
That this is treason. This is sedition.
Sedition. So it's established in the congressional record. Now, was it remedied? Were there any hearings? Was there anything that happened after that?
This is remarkable. Normally, once a resolution is put forward, and this was resolution number 95 that year, and there was never a follow-up. There was not even a hearing. So Congress just dropped, whoever was running the Congress at the time, just dropped the subject. It was never followed up.
So that's kind of what we see today with lawfare. They throw it into this congressional thing, this mush, and nothing ever gets resolved. And then the media never follows up to see if it got resolved, and the people just move on, and we just don't know. Well, I guess it got resolved, right? But what we're saying is that JP Morgan and the Rothschilds control not only the silver price, but also the media that we listen to. So when Trump says that it's fake news, it's more than fake news. The news, the corporate news, yes, folks, that includes your Tucker Carlson and your Sean Hannity, because they work for the enemy. The enemy is corporate media.
Yeah, it's the moneyed interests and their commercial interests that create the money for them. And what we now see is that from the time of early wireless, our information flow in the world was controlled by these interests, and they have not let go to this day.
So folks understand what the media is, when we say propaganda, they are the marketing arm of the war industry. Because war needs to, if you're a customer, you have to feel that you have a need for war armaments. And so if your news is constantly telling you go to war, then you buy from their industry, and then the Rothschilds keep getting richer. But now I want to jump. We've established here historically that JP Morgan was involved in treachery against the United States. We see a congressional record that shows that, and we see nothing until you discovered it just recently that has been done to remedy this. And I have a solution of how we need to remedy this. You know, JP Morgan has been suppressing the price of silver for a long time, and patriots know this because patriots have been stacking the silver, waiting for the day that the price would be released. It needs to be released, but more than that, we need to seize, confiscate, whatever legally needs to be done. The 55 million ounces that JP Morgan Rothschilds has hoarded for itself, but really what it did was rip off the American people, lie to the American people, and commit treachery. And let me add one more thing about Chase Bank. When the PPP came out, and small businesses were scrambling to get that money, JP Morgan's put a throttle on it. I know from personal experience. And they didn't release the application for about 2 weeks. And even then, when they released it, it was throttled. And I wondered, why was it that Chase wanted to see harm come to small and medium-sized businesses? My regional bank was perfectly willing and able to get up and provide the loan. So you see, Chase Bank is also our enemy, and we need to go in and seize their assets on behalf of the U.S. Treasury. And that can be part of the basket that we need to set for our new currency when it is reset by the U.S. Treasury.
To underscore what you just said, Betsy, between J.P. Morgan Chase and Citibank, they have equity stock of in commodity of silver, a $2.4 trillion. Now, they use that for derivatives, okay? And they make so much money off of betting on that price of that, but then they control the silver market. They control 76% of all silver that's out there. So what we're looking at here is a few years ago, the SEC and Federal Trade Commission and four or five agencies went after J.P. Morgan and Citibank and said, for years, they prosecuted this case saying you manipulate the market for silver and then you use that illegally. And they eventually had to say, yes, we did. They got charged. And then in the end, right when they were being sentenced, they said, oh, by the way, here's a letter from the U.S. Treasury saying they wanted us to do it and that we have absolute immunity to do so.
Now, if the price of silver was not suppressed by these forces, oh my goodness, would the economy rock? Because all these years, you know who's been stacking silver besides Chase? Are patriots. Patriots who love this country, who knew that one day this would happen, and we would need to have real money set aside to restart our economy. So President Trump, if you happen to hear this, please consider releasing silver and gold from the suppression of the big banks.
Which is Rothschilds, which is Morgan, which is the Rockefellers, which is Carnegie, which it's just unbelievable that how many times do they have to change their name to hide who they are? But so if you said to somebody, which is the bank that the Rockefellers have been controlling all this time, no one can probably tell you now because they've changed the name so many times. But it is true what Betsy just said. The president needs to say, if we have a free market, we cannot allow the biggest banks to control the derivative markets hedging on silver. That's insane. And just as she said, we need a basket of commodities, you know, silver coins, gold coins, as well as gold and silver as it in bullion, as well as all kinds of other rare metals, as well as other things that are value, so that we actually have a value behind our currency. So no matter what, if they tell you the currency is going to collapse, it doesn't matter. It can be restructured because just as Betsy suggests, her and her team, we need to seize that silver because it's part of a crime. So America, you just got $2.4 trillion in real commodities to go into your basket overnight by simply seizing it from the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, and the Morgans.
Yeah, they actually, in 1917, in February of 1917, Joseph Moore, 3rd District, Pennsylvania, rose to complain, and he said, the coast of the world seemed to have been raked to find some overt act to force the president to come in and hear and ask us to declare war. They had had some false flag event that he is responding to. We have had very little but rumors, but we have had headlines galore, all with a view of stampeding the house and stampeding the country into an act of war. And then there was an applause. I rose to make this very brief statement because I do not want the people of this country to be deceived. I am satisfied that most of the people of the country want peace, peace with honor, of course, applause. But they do not want to go into a dishonorable war, and they ought not to be forced into a war by the munitions makers or the munitions users of this or any other land. So these guys were wise to them back then, and all of this revelation has been suppressed by history. And here we are, 100 years later, telling these guys, hey, you're right. You were 100% right. And we now have British secret documents to prove you were right.
And the explosive makers, Alfred Nobel, Noble and Alfred Mond, you showed their connection to the whole pharmaceutical chemical industry and the way that, why don't we just say to those people, we're not going to allow you to make these weapons for both sides of the war. I mean, that's all we'd have to do is a slight, tiniest bit of logic to say, sorry, warmongers, we're not going to let you exist. And sorry, British propaganda mongers who want to start World War One, World War Two, Korean War, Vietnam War, the Iraqi War, the Afghani War, the war in Syria,
Rwanda.
I mean, every war. Look, it's British intelligence, British and French intelligence. And usually the French didn't even do it. The British just say they did. So what do we have here? They've been lying to us. They've never let go of us. We are still their colony. And they laugh at us. Some people in Britain laugh at us saying, oh, no, no, there was no American Revolution. You didn't win it.
Well, you've said that for years, ever since I've known you. And at first, I didn't know what you were talking about. But I'll have to say, Douglas, I don't think I've ever proven that your point of view was not justified. So what we see now is more proof that America is not in control of itself. There's all these seditious forces. And so the question is, are we going to follow our laws or should we just give up and join this new world order that these people wanted 100 years ago? And what's amazing to me is that if you look at that Harper's Magazine article that Sir Parker wrote in 1918 during the war, before the war was over. And he was actually describing all the propaganda efforts and who they were working with in this country. I called you yesterday. I said, well, why did he think he was going to get away with discussing that? Because did he not realize that every American he named, what he was giving proof of sedition to? And your comment was, well, they probably thought they had the New World Order in the bag with the formation of the League of Nations, and so it wouldn't catch up to them. Well, it doesn't that sound familiar to the story of how the FBI organized itself to try to take down Donald Trump? Clearly sedition, but and they didn't even hide their behavior completely, and therefore we now see all the evidence. And so there is a common behavior trait of these people. It's an extreme arrogance. It's beyond arrogance. It's a knowing that they are a part of the undercurrent of the control of the world through the Rothschilds and the American cooperators. And so I'm sure by them believing if they stay in that zone, they will be protected is the reason we see this arrogance and this lack of fear of any kind of consequence.
British loyalists, and they're so confident because why wouldn't they be confident? They look at the United Nations, the British created United Nations, which was nothing more than the League of Nations, which was nothing more than their first imperialistic group based upon the robber barons' lawyers and the robber barons getting together on both sides of the ocean and saying, you know, how are we going to control humanity? They control literally every part of modern humanity. Let me give you a tiny example. So the inquiry, the group of lawyers from Ford, Carnegie, Rockefeller, Morgan, who are really Rothschild, and a bunch of others. So the robber barons, right? They get their group together, the inquiry. Well, the inquiry goes to the Paris Peace Conference and at Versailles, and they can't even get a peace agreement, and they can't get Americans to want to join the League of Nations. So what do? Behind the scenes, they simply move the British Institute for International Affairs, which is also called the Round Table, which was, of course, Milner's Round Table, which was Cecil Rhodes' Round Table. And don't forget, Cecil Rhodes' Round Table had N.M. Rothschild on it, Lord Rosebery, and Henry de Worms, some of the most powerful people in modern history. And their influence still goes on because they became the Pilgrims, of course. So you get to see that the inquiry, this little group that went over they let the secret behind closed doors parceling up of the Levant happen through British control, parceling up of the world, parceling up of oil, parceling up of all that is being fleeced of from World War One.
But uranium, coal,
everything,
iron ore.
They couldn't sell America on it. So they created the Council on Foreign Relations. Again, very British influenced, very Jesuit influenced, paid for by Rockefeller and still to this moment. And so what do? They get us into the United Nations. Well, now the United Nations is trying to control us with our guns. They try to take away our guns, take away control of our cities, take away control of everything. But here's the big deal right now, and this proves our point. It's by no accident that Lord Malik Brown became the second in charge of the United Nations, because guess who actually controls the whole world? There is a controller of the world, and they are the ultimate monarchy, and that is the World Health Organization. They supersede the sovereignty of our own constitution here in America because they control the CDC, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and the National Institutes for Health. So basically the sovereignty of our country, and it's on the laws. If there's a pandemic, then the World Health Organization tells the whole world what to do, and they have complete control of every human being and their bloodstream. That is a British control. That's what the British had as their imperialistic hegemony plan from the beginning, and they have used the United Nations, and they have effectively shown that they almost did it. But here in America, we have something called patriots and minutemen and minutewomen, and we have citizen journalists, and we have researchers who can actually go out and find the truth. And as Betsy just said, breaking news. Listen to this history you never got to hear. That's what you're doing. And it's just amazing because I'm a historian. I got a degree in it. And every day you bring up things I didn't know. And in fact, I thought I looked and I couldn't find. So I can't thank you enough for your research.
Well, you're welcome. Yeah, you tie this propaganda to surveillance and now to biology and healthcare. And the other strain of this that we see going back into the formation of this strategy in the 1890s timeframe with J.P. Morgan, now we see, was Henry Wellcome and the Wellcome Trust, which is the largest funder of biological research on the planet, with Bill Gates following in number two. And what we see there is, at the same time, there was this family called the Mond family that had a grandfather that invented some munitions, armament-making processes in Germany. He moved to England, into a place called Winnington. And he then began making gunpowder. And that gunpowder interest, and you'll see, we saw that in this document, is much more powerful than I ever thought about. But what we see from following the Mond family, and by the way, we have Mond's picture at the Imperial Press Conference in 1909, and he's referenced many times in their minutes, in their notes. By then, the Mond family had a total monopoly on munitions worldwide in the British Empire. And he was closely tied to Henry Wellcome. And we see, as the Mond story, it was Brunner Mond. And then at some point in the 1920s, they changed the name to Imperial Chemical Industries and continued to march right on with a complete monopoly on munitions worldwide. They even subsumed DuPont here in this country. And to this day, they have a monopoly globally on all gunpowder, munitions, anything that blows up, explosives. And they even merged Nobel explosives into ICI. And then magically in 1992 or 93, they split the company in two, and half of it became this massive pharmaceutical enterprise called AstraZeneca, which, and then the other half continued to build better and bigger bombs. And now this AstraZeneca group, which was formed out of all ICI engineers and directors, has now announced that they have the vaccine that's going to save us all now from the coronavirus. And they've gotten the contract from the British government and the European Union to provide this supposed vaccine to essentially anybody in those countries. And then they're even talking about getting that contract for the U.S. So we've got an explosives manufacturer heritage building vaccines that are going to be pumped into our bloodstream. Now, what part of that do I not get? That's so ridiculous.
Just become a devil worshiper.
Oh my gosh.
Worship the path of perdition, the seven deadly sins.
You can trust the bomb maker.
Yeah. What's wrong with that?
Sure. Yeah.
And then I'm going to give out the Nobel Peace Prize to Barack Obama, who dropped more bombs than any president in human history, because he's all about peace.
Yeah. You can't make this stuff up. So we've got a bomb maker that's going to give us vaccines that's going to save our lives. I don't think so.
They simply went from bullets and bombs to injections and vaccines. And I like what was entered into the record that you had read earlier. I really, really liked it when the person called these people inhuman. Mm-hmm. And really, that's the reason people, and I made the joke there, they accused them of devil worshippers. Well, they're not in any way, do they appreciate human beings or anything divine? So they assume they must be worshiping the road to hell and the devil. Well, I can understand that. And then when you said, and that same report, you know, called them harlots in the press, we call them today prostitutes now, don't we? And
yes.
They have sold their souls, and some of the richest family members end up in the press instead of out there spending more. They have more money than they can spend, but what are they? They're an anchor at CNN. Okay, that shows that the rich people know the power of propaganda. They're willing to give up their children's entire lives, like Mika Brzezinski. What's her name?
That's right.
Yeah. Anyway, that her dad, Zbigniew Brzezinski, was one of the evilest men in modern American history, but she is on the news saying stupid stuff. She doesn't even write anything. She writes nothing. She simply reads what she's read now.
The corporate imperial neo-imperial royalty.
And they're smug because of the following. Because Lord Malik Brown, with Jimmy Carter, developed Optech, which controls most of the election devices throughout the whole world. So elections in all countries, including America, and they brag about this, Lord Malik Brown and Jeffrey Patty brag about the fact that their Cambridge Analytica, which they tried to blame Trump for using, really has a mother company that is now closed in the old British fashion and moved on to new names. What's it called? A Strategic Communication Laboratory. They're the ones who meddled in the 2016 election, you see. So when it comes down to it, they can control elections. They can control the propaganda. They have their people placed. The bankers all marry other banker family members so that no matter what, these asset management companies and these banking families just simply keep changing the names of the groups that manage their money. Capital management, asset management, you name it. So what we see here is true evil. And I've said it before, and we can see it in the fact that fake news, that they know that it's fake. They know it's a lie. And every day they come on and stick their face on the screen and tell you lies that they know they didn't research. They know it's not true. They know they have no sources. And they know that they're propagandizing, and they know that it's for evil intent. As a friend of ours who I just spoke with, who's a Romanian, he and his wife born in Romania, they over here now, and he says that he just looks at this stuff, the news and these people, and he can smell the stench of communism on him.
Yes. I said that 15 years ago. 15 years ago, I said, I'm getting a feel of what is coming to America, and it feels a lot like the decline of the old Soviet Union, which I knew a lot about. And in fact, that's exactly what we're seeing now. It's been very cleverly disguised. But Representative Mickelson's actual phrase was kept literary harlots. And I think that what he's saying is that there's nothing in the media that has integrity. And he saw it then. That was 100 years ago. And here we have kept literary harlots today. Representative Mickelson is speaking to us 100 years later, and he's saying, folks, let's finally get this. It's not only him. It's also Callaway, Representative Callaway, and Representative Moore, and everybody who applauded them when they made their speeches in Congress.